Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron. Well, last week marked a special day here at KSKA because 45 years ago, on August 15th, this station played its very first audio. And on today's show, we have two KSKA juggernauts, founding general manager Alex Hills and longtime KSKA program director and Friday enthusiast BD Trantina. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Hello there. It's an honor to be here with BD.
Good to see you, Dave.
I shouldn't say welcome. I should say welcome back to both of you, because I'm just keeping the seat warm for either one of you. We're always waiting for you to come back.
It's good to be back.
Alex, take us back 45 years in time. What led up to that day, August 15th, 1978, and what made you want to start South Central Alaska's very first public radio station?
Well, the idea of public broadcasting actually started way earlier. It started down in the South 48 in the mid-60s when they came up with the idea of public broadcasting as an alternative to commercial broadcasting, which the feeling was then that it wasn't meeting all audience needs. There were audiences for in-depth news and classical music and things like that. So that idea came out of the federal government with the creation of something called the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It came to Alaska in 1970 when the state created the Alaska, what they called the Alaska Educational Broadcast Commission, which was really about public broadcasting. And then they were in a position to fund public radio stations and public TV stations across the state. Now, it took 7 years before Anchorage got any attention in the world of public radio. You might wonder why. That was because the need was so great out in rural Alaska. So as usual, we were different in Alaska. In Alaska, the need was so great out in the western and northern parts of the states, and also to some degree in southeast, that those stations were given priority. We created stations out there first. And then by 1977, the State Broadcast Commission made it known that they were going to have some funding for a public radio station in Anchorage. And by the way, KAKM Channel 7 was already on the air by that time. But public radio in Anchorage was finally starting to get some attention. And so they made it known that there was funding for a public radio station. And there were several groups that wanted to do that. And so there was a kind of a competition. Proposals were submitted. And a group called Aurora Community Broadcasting Incorporated, they had formed a nonprofit corporation, and they submitted the winning proposal. So they got the nod, and then they were authorized to go ahead and get an FCC license and to build facilities. And so I heard from them in about early 1978 when they asked me to come in as the general manager to get things started. So did that answer your question?
It does. Yeah, that's very thorough. What was the very first audio that KSK did air? What did it sound like?
Well, it was later in 1978 after we hired a staff. And by the way, we had a huge staff of 6 full-time employees at that time. I don't know how many you have now.
More than 6.
Yeah, I thought maybe a few more than 6. So anyway, we did the first broadcast August 15th, 1978, from the auditorium in Grant Hall. Now, our studio was toward the back of Grant Hall, but the auditorium was on the front side of Grant Hall. A lot of people have probably been in there. And so we had multiple local bands that were ready to perform. We had Alaska Governor Jay Hammond on hand in person to make a speech and to congratulate us. We had letters of congratulation from the entire congressional delegation. That was Senators Ted Stevens, Mike Gravel, and of course Don Young. We all remember him. The entire staff was there too. And people were pretty nervous, pretty excited, you know, wanted things to go right. But anyway, I think it was about 7 o'clock. We flipped a switch and the lights came up and the show started. And that was the very first broadcast on the station. We went until about midnight. We stayed on the air until midnight that night. And then the next morning at 6 a.m., we signed on again. 18 hours a day. I know it's 24 hours a day now, but we were 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's how it happened.
I love that you just flip on the switch and make radio happen in those days. It reminds me of just like arming a missile or getting a spaceship ready for launch. So I want to ask about some of those early programs that we had back in 78, and you brought in this cool program rundown, with some shows that I do recognize. They're still airing today. We have All Things Considered on there, but a lot that I don't recognize. Let's talk about, we got Brown Bag Special. We've got The Spider's Web. That's pretty cool sounding. The Country Gentleman. Seems like we had a lot of music back then. Less news and more music.
Right. Well, the big picture is that, first of all, there was some inspiration from what public radio was doing in the cities in the South 48. And so I would say, and BD, you're going to have to help me out here, but in the daytime hours, we had a lot of classical music, we had some folk, we had some jazz, mm-hmm. and we were really heavy on news. Mm-hmm. So that would sort of describe the weekday schedule from 6 a.m. until 7 p.m., and then things got more varied and more interesting because that was when our volunteer people came in. And I mentioned a minute ago that we had a gigantic staff of 6 people, so we needed a lot of volunteer help. And Beatty and I, earlier, we were trying to estimate how many volunteers we had working at the station, and we don't know. It was a big number. We came up with a number somewhere between 50 and 100 volunteers. And these people, I mean, they were working in the office. They were working in the record library. I see you have CDs here, but we had vinyl back then, mm-hmm. and it all had to be sorted. So anyway, but another kind of volunteer was someone who was on air. And these are those ones that you mentioned, a couple of them there. So after the classical music was finished in the daytime, then the really creative people came in. And
I just have to ask, I mean, The Country Gentleman, that's not Steve Heimel, is it? I would love to know.
I don't recall
long time
Talk
of Alaska
program
host.
Or what the music was or anything. But in addition to what Alex was talking about as far as the volunteer program producers, we didn't have anything that was automated back then. So mm-hmm. we had board operators that were volunteers, and especially on the weekends that we had from 6 in the morning until midnight. And they would roll tape, and sometimes their only on-air presence would be at the top of the hour, and they would do a legal ID. Mm-hmm. But bless their hearts, they just loved being at the station and helping us run the operations by being board operators.
Well, and that's a great transition for you, Beatty. You came in less than a year after the station began. So what brought you through the doors originally?
Well, I became friends with one of the original staff members, Corky Merkel, and she and I were doing artwork for the station. She was full-time with the station, and I had just moved up finishing school. And so I was helping out in primarily doing ads and laying out the program guide and things of that sort. And she said, why don't you come to the station and just sit in on my board shift with me? So it was a Sunday, and I said, okay. I didn't really know what to expect at all. And I walked in, and I was just hooked. I couldn't believe. I can still remember the on-air studio, which there were a few studios, but the main on-air, the microphone and the board and the transmitter, and there was just something about this environment that I thought, this is where I have to be. And then Corky said, well, we need volunteers. And I said, I will volunteer to do pretty much anything. So I was a Monday night from 11 until midnight. I would come in and play music, volunteer's choice. And then something else, they needed a vacation relief person. And I had been working at a little job in Anchorage, and I quit that job for 2 weeks of full-time vacation relief. And then that person came back from vacation, and they needed somebody else to do a two-week vacation relief. So I was at the station for maybe 10 weeks. And I never left. I just thought, this is the greatest thing. I just couldn't believe the magic of being in the control room and hearing NPR and doing segues. And everything was just a magic for me.
Beatty lasted us all. And sure. I thought maybe we should qualify, but that board operator was B-O-A-R-D, not B-O-R-E-D.
That's correct. B-O-A-R-D. Yeah. Yep. Legal operator of the station. Sign on, sign off.
Well, I like that you mentioned Corky there, because we do have a message from her about your first introduction to KSKA.
So. Oh, my heaven's sake.
Well, Beatty had just come to town to visit her brother, who was one of my brother's Perry Merkel of Cafe Del Mundo that a lot of people, I'm sure, still know. So Edie came up to visit Chip, her brother, who had worked with Perry at the Captain Cook. And I was Perry's little sister. We met in their backyard, and she was kind of wondering what she was going to do to get to know Anchorage better and see if she wanted to move there. And I immediately suggested, oh, come volunteer at this radio station. And Beattie was so quiet and kind of understated. She said, oh, I don't know about radio. And I said, no, there's a million things you could do. Come volunteer. I'll teach you everything you need to know. Ha ha.
So I don't know about radio to 39 years in radio and a distinguished career at that. Let's talk about some of that. How did you go from just like a volunteer? And then, as a lot of people know, you became the longtime program director here.
I think that I made so many mistakes and I was so bad when I first started, but there was just that love of, if I just put in the time and put in the work and do some practice, I could probably do more with the station. I really didn't envision that I was going to be with the station for 39 years. I really didn't. But I thought there's just a love and a passion here. And I remember there were two people on NPR, Jackie Judd and Diane Diamond, and they were newscasters. And I loved their delivery. And I thought, what is it that makes them unique as far as being on the air? And so I would study what they sounded like and their delivery. And then I would take AP copy and I would go into the production studio and I would read stories from that were coming over the AP, record myself, listen to it over and over and over again. And I thought, okay, you need to slow down. You need to drop your voice. You need to develop a better style. And it was because of that that I knew that I was green and I sounded green and I knew what I wanted to sound like. And then Corky gave me a really good piece of advice way back in the day. She said, don't change your voice. Don't try to adopt a radio voice, just use your own voice. And that was a piece of advice that I used throughout. And that's something that I think is just so wonderful about radio is everyone has their unique sound. Mm-hmm.
I heard that you've given enunciation lessons to some other announcers.
Perhaps.
Probably some famous ones, I would guess. We don't want to leave you out, Alex. We also have a message from Corky to you as well. Corky is one of the original founding members of KSK, so she had something to say for you as well.
Alex, let's see. Oh, God, he's the best boss I ever had to this day. And I'm an old lady now, and I was 21, I think, when he hired me. And I'm 67 now, so that's been a long career. Most of it I worked for myself, but I have had a few bosses. He reigns supreme, I think.
Best boss. All those years, Beattie is my best boss that I had. She was my boss for 1 year there. And it's a room full of best bosses.
Corky used to kid me because I was also an engineer, but she said engineers are supposed to wear high water pants with white socks and a pocket protector.
I would agree that you were one of the best bosses. You hired me, and there were so many times that you would come in. Now, you're general manager at that time. And here I was being on the air, struggling with threading a tape or getting it up ready to go. And you would come in and you'd say, I'm the general manager, but I'm also a radio guy, too. So let me give you a hand.
Yeah, there was that time that I saved you from pushing the button and nothing would happen. So
yes, more than once, I'm sure.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of terrible bosses out there as well. So what is your advice, seriously, to those bosses? What's the
secret?
You know,
we really had such a great team. And the other members of the team besides Corky were Jeff Berliner, who was our news announcer for many years, news director, and Barbara Hare, who was our classical music expert. She helped us pronounce all the names, right,
Yes,
Phoebe?
She did. Yes, yeah. She did.
And I think, did Barbara become program director in later years?
Mm-hmm.
And then I also had helping me in the office a young lady named Janine Kring, who was my administrative assistant. But it was just such a great team, you know, and I really liked the mentoring role. And just I think we had an energy back then, though, that that really made it all work. It wasn't like you were just on air. There were a lot of things that needed to be done. So everybody pitched in and everybody got it done. with the help of those 50 to 100 volunteers, of course.
Right. Yeah. The number keeps growing. I love it.
Boy, I would say a great staff. Give your staff the tools and the opportunities to excel and be supportive, guiding, because there's overall goals and objectives, you know, for the department and for the company as a whole. But I work with some great people throughout.
My answer would be hire good people and let them do their job.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that collaborative effort, Alex, so I read in your bio that it was your mission to fix Alaska's communication system. How did that become your mission? And I guess what was broken about it if it needed fixing?
Well, in rural Alaska, we didn't have a communication system. So maybe it would have been better to have said to create the communication system. And that meant not only the public radio stations out there, which I was the founding general manager in Kotzebue and helped the ones in Barrow and Dillingham and Bethel, but also built the first telephone system out there. So that was what needed to get fixed. Now there's something else that needs to get fixed, and it's called broadband. And so now we're working on that one.
And what about it just drew you into it? Why was that so important to you?
Well, you know, I had worked in a development lab. I worked with IBM, with the fastest supercomputer in the world as a design team there. But somehow working in a lab didn't seem quite right. And so I did my military service, did a few other things, and just wanted to work in the field. So I guess you can't get much more in the field than Western Alaska in the wide open spaces. And so that was what did it for me.
And you were also one of the original founders of the Alaska Public Radio Network. What was the reason behind banding these public radio stations together all over the state?
Oh, right. So great question. So in 1978, the same year that we came on the air, there were at that point, I guess, about 10 public radio stations in the state. There were the 8 that I mentioned. There was KUAC in Fairbanks, which had been around before public radio, and then us. And we were doing well with national and international news because we had NPR, but state news, not so much. We felt like we needed to do something for state news. And so just like now, you've got news reporters in the stations who could feed in, right? And so that's how we created the Alaska Public Radio Network. So it was an initiative of the station managers of the 10 stations, and probably I would say mostly Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, but the others were all in there. And originally it was just a fledgling operation, just let's work together. I remember the very first broadcast, the very first program, the regular program on APRN was a legislative report that came out of Juneau. And so when the legislature was in session, we had a lady whose name was Elaine Mitchell, and she would go to a payphone in the Capitol building and she would do her 15-minute broadcast, and that was how we got the news. That was how it worked in the beginning.
So a phone call, a 15-minute phone call from...
from a payphone.
From a payphone in Juneau. All right, after this short break, we'll be back with Alex Hills and BD Trantina, two of the most important people in KSK's 45-year history. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
Hi, my name is Larry, and as a member and listener for almost all of your 45 years, I woke up for decades to BD Trentina telling me what weather to expect each day. Now that I'm retired, I can plan my days around Bird Note and the 10 a.m. programming, often taking them with me on walks or hikes. KSKA is my only radio station since I know that the news is reliable and diversified. Happy birthday.
This is Santa Claus in North Pole wishing KSK a very happy 45th birthday. Thank you for broadcasting NPR, BBC, and Alaska public broadcasting programs, especially the news and community and public affairs. Looking forward to your next decades of great programming. Thanks again.
You just bring so much light into the world on my morning drives when I was working. Such a great delight, and I just wish you happy birthday and many, many years of continued success.
Happy 45th birthday, KSKA. This is Rick Baldwin. I was the kid who painted your first broadcast tower at Grant Hall. Orange and white, orange and white, orange and white. I remember unpacking the initial boxes of vinyl that were arriving while our amazing engineer, Franklin Butte, was wiring the station and our first manager, Alex Hills, was settling in. I had the opportunity to be present in your infancy as my mother, Connie Baldwin McGregor, along with Jim Parsons, Dennis Maloney, and other passionate and dedicated founders, helped set you on your way. Congratulations to you, congratulations to them, and congratulations to today's fortunate listeners and supporters who will be enjoying you and caring for you over the next 45 years.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and I'm in the studio with KSKA's founding general manager, Alex Hills, and Beatty Trantina, who served as the station's program director during her 39 years of service. Today, we're discussing KSKA's 45 years on air, and before we get back to our conversation, we have one last message from Corky Parker, who is one of the original staff members of the station. She shared this story about KSKA's first day on air.
I remember distinctly the night that we turned on the switch. I was the lucky gal. If you saw the photos, I'm sitting there in a pink dress and I'm all kind of gussied up, but we flipped the switch and I got to say, good evening. This is KSKA Anchorage Public Radio for the first time. And that was tremendously exciting. I will never forget that. That kind of changed my life. I thought I was going to go to law school, but I fell in love with radio instead and never went to law school. So KSK was profoundly important to me.
And Alex, were you in the room? I imagine you were.
Yes. The layout was that the studio was more toward the back of Grant Hall and the auditorium was more toward the front. And so Corky was in the studio where the controls were, and I was there at first, but then the show happened in the auditorium.
Beatty, what were those early days with Alex like? And was there a particular point where you just knew you weren't going to leave and this was where you're going to do your entire career? Because you said it didn't come right away.
It didn't come right away, but I knew I was not going to leave the station following that first board shift with Corky.
When it was over.
When it was over. I had planned to stay an hour. I stayed the whole 8 hours. And I said, when can I come back? Mm-hmm. And then we started talking about other things in the station that needed to get done, being a volunteer board operator, being an assistant with whatever. So that I knew in some way that I was going to be with the station for a long time. But I couldn't believe it when they hired me and I was actually getting paid to do this stuff, because I would have done it for free.
Gee, if I only known that.
I know, if you'd only known that. So it was just, there was always something to learn. And there was always something to build on, something to experience. And then after a while, there was a year and then 10 years. And then it just seemed like I'm going to be doing this for as long as I possibly can. And I think even driving to work in the morning, we signed on with Morning Edition September 29th of 1980. And so when I would be driving to work, I would think to myself, I'm going to a radio station. That's where I work. The novelty of being here just never wore off. And I think that, you know, you and other people who have worked at the station, there's a sacredness to protecting the airwaves, that it's almost like church in a way, that I thought, this is serious business. You are going to be on time. You're going to be ready. You're going to educate yourself if you need to during the course of what you need to do or what you're responsible for. And there was just that, I can do this, and I'm just going to work as hard as I can to be the best.
There's a certain intimacy about radio mm-hmm. that you don't get with that other medium, that mm-hmm. one with pictures, you know? I know that when people listen to you on the radio, they develop an image of what you look like. And then in my case, when they finally met me, what a disappointment.
I have met those disappointed in how I look, too.
So safe to say, after 39 years, a lot of people in Alaska know your voice, PD. Mm-hmm. But as you say, probably not your face. And I know you're kind of a private person and prefer it that way. But part of me wants you to get the fame that you deserve, and I want people to recognize you at the grocery store and fawn over you. So does that happen at all today? Do people recognize you?
No, they don't. And that is just fine with me. That is just fine with me. There are some people that I have met that I've been introduced, and I'm trying to remember that it was occasion just recently, and they said, this is Beatty Trantina. And they said, wait a minute, I recognize that name. Where do I know Beatty Trantina? And then the person said, oh, she was on the radio for a long time. Oh, yes, of course. You know, I remember who you are and I recognize your name. That I always find to be so humbling and so warm that people would recognize or remember and have that be part of like a voice that they might have grown up with.
If I could just tag on to that, I at one time worked in commercial radio. In commercial radio, there are a lot of big egos, to say the least. Beatty was the first person I ever knew who was reluctant to say her name on the air. I'd call that humility.
Oh, well, thank you.
I would too. But we did get you eventually. Did they make you do a Beatty?
You know, we used to have, during Morning Edition, that we had a standard intro and an outro when we did newscasts, and that included it's 65 degrees and sunny on this Monday morning. It's 7 o'clock. I'm Beatty Trantina. This is the news. So it was kind of a standard, but that was about the only time that I said my name on air.
I rest my case.
Well, Alex, I want to go back to you and the earlier days. As station manager, I know that you did a lot more than just attend meetings and sign paychecks. You're a pretty humble guy yourself. You did everything from program directing to audio engineering. I heard you used to climb the radio tower, which is not something they let anyone do. I don't even think we let anyone do it in our building today. I think we have to contract someone else to do that. So was that out of necessity that you did all
it
that,
was
those
out,
works?
Or? Yes, it was out of necessity. So in the beginning, we were a low-power station. In radio, we used to call it a peanut whistle. And in addition to that, we also had an antenna that was pretty low. It was on top of Grant Hall. We had a 70-foot tower, and it really wasn't very high. And so we had a coverage problem, and we would get a lot of phone calls, and we'd hear from listeners that they were having trouble picking up the station.
3,000 watts.
Yeah. It was not very much. So we would advise people on how to connect an antenna to their radio, which wasn't really very satisfying for them, but some people were willing to do it. But anyway, part of the problem was the antenna. So as one of my extra duties as general manager, I climbed the tower frequently to make adjustments to the antenna.
You know, I'm going to jump in here when you talk about great bosses. Alex, you set the example as far as people were expected to do whatever needs to be done. And when you saw the general manager empty the waste paper baskets, you figure, okay, well, that's part of what I did too. And I think because of that, you learn almost every aspect of how the radio station works and putting a new story together, choosing classical music, practicing doing a newscast, a delivery of a newscast. So you just learn how each aspect plays into making a successful radio station work. And I think you set the example.
Did you want to talk about how we used to edit?
Oh, with razor blades. You remember that, Dave.
No, I came after the razor blades, unfortunately.
You did.
Yeah, but let's talk about the tech. I mean, the technology obviously has come a very long way since 1978. What was it like putting together the news and programming?
Yeah, well, it was all analog, obviously.
Sure.
And we had a teletype machine, right? So the news would come in on the teletype machine. For stations that didn't want to put a lot of effort into the newscasts, they had what we called rip and read, which was you just rip the paper off the teletype machine and read it. It was simple. We put a little more energy into it than that. What else?
Talking about the AP machine, three
right.
bells was a new story coming over the wire. Five bells was a breaking news story, and I think 10 bells was an EBS test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but boy, if you let that AP machine roll of paper run out, then those keys are just typing nothing, and you have no weather, no news, no Associated Press kind of information coming in.
Our secret weapon was news director Jeff Berliner, who was one of the most aggressive news reporters I've ever run into. The only thing was we had to keep him drinking coffee. Coffee was his fuel. So if we kept Jeff fully caffeinated, everything was great.
So he was already angry, and then you over-caffeinated him. That was the
I would say energetic. You know, yeah. He was wound up.
Alex, do you remember how he used to type?
One finger.
One finger. The fastest typist using one finger I have ever seen.
Wow.
He was a great teacher.
And we did edit programs using another analog method. Was you had quarter-inch magnetic tape. You put it on a splicing block, you cut it with a razor blade, and then you put a piece of tape over it. And so now you have all this digital editing, right? I mean, you can mix and match and do different things. We did all that physically with a piece of tape and a razor blade. How about that?
It's stressing me out just thinking about it. Let's talk a little bit about the funding part of public radio. Alex, it's always been really volatile how much money a station's going to get. We don't usually know oftentimes. What was it like to manage a station when you just didn't really know how much money was going to be there next year?
Well, we had an allocation from the state. We were pretty low budget because we only had 6 employees. So in the beginning, in the very beginning, it was pretty much all that allocation that we got from the state. But we quickly jumped into doing our own fundraising. Corky was a big part of that. And I think I sent you a copy of our poster for our Bluegrass Festival. That was one of the things that we did. I don't know if it was the first Bluegrass Festival in Anchorage. It was pretty early. That was a fundraiser. We did on-air fund drives. If you were a member of the station, you'd get a program guide through the mail. So that was an incentive. That's kind of pretty old technology, right?
A coffee mug,
mm-hmm. All that stuff. Yeah. So it was in the beginning, I think we were reasonably secure because we had a state funding allocation. But then as time went on, and, you know, especially in recent years, there's been some challenges from government funding, state and federal. And so, but we probably didn't have such big challenges back then.
Well, BD, one of the challenges of running a radio station, and one of the most basic of them, is avoiding dead air. And at some point, I love this about the station still, even to this day. At some point, KSK installed a failsafe to avoid dead air.
A music bed.
And it involved jazz.
Oh, God.
Chuck
Mangione.
Can you tell us what we're hearing right now?
This is from his Live at the Hollywood Bowl. And I think it might be the Land of Make-Believe, or maybe the Land of Make-Believe follows this.
Mm-hmm.
But it struck terror in my heart every time I would hear that coming over the station when I was at home.
Are you doing okay right now? Does it still stress you out
today? It kind of makes me sweat a little bit, I'll tell you the truth.
All right. We can get rid of it. But so as an employee, I knew what that music meant. It meant something was wrong at the station. There was a playlist error, or we just weren't getting a feed from an audio source. And I knew that you were either sprinting or quickly driving to the station because you always were listening to KSKA. Do you think the listeners ever identified that as our panic anthem at KSKA?
I hope not. I really hope not. But I think that we have a very, very smart audience.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are listening to that music rather than listening to Fresh Air or All Things Considered or something like that, or maybe something on the weekend, they're going to figure, well, I thought the Moth Radio Hour was on at this time, and now we're listening to music. And I think that prior to that music kicking in, there was a recording of my voice that said, "This is KSKA Anchorage. We're experiencing some technical difficulty that we are addressing as quickly as we can. Thank you for your patience." And that was the only recorded message that was on the air with my voice when I left, when I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, there is a legacy right there. I'm going to be the bearer of bad news.
Who chose Chuck? I'm just curious.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's soothing, so that had to have been a huge reason, right? Nothing's wrong here.
Right, and it was a long piece. It wasn't like shortcuts and live, so there was audience, and there had a little bit of texture to it, mixture to it. But, he got a lot of airplay.
Well, you mentioned it, BD. You know, you've been retired 5 years now. And unfortunately, you did have a pandemic right in the middle of your retirement. But what else have you been up to since you left the station? I'm sure a lot of our listeners want to know.
I will say right off, I am very fortunate, first off, to be able to have been retired. And so that I'm extremely grateful for. I do volunteer work. I've been a volunteer down in the newborn intensive care unit at Providence Hospital for, I think, over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that is the highlight of my week. So I love being in that environment and holding those little babies and working with the staff at Providence. The NICU staff is just wonderful. And I garden and I read and I have getting together with friends, do a little bit of traveling. So I keep myself pretty busy.
Do you ever think about coming back, other than when I ask you to come back for a show?
No. It was a good decision that I made, that it was time for me to go and to make room for the next group of people. And so I was lucky to be able to have timed it the way that I did.
Well, I know you and Alex both have a lot of memories tied to this station. So what are some of your favorite memories of being here? Or in Grant Hall, depending on when you were at KSKA.
You know, one thing I remember that, Alex, I'm sure that you will remember going back to Grant Hall. When we first started, the university didn't give us a key to the building. So the only way we could get into the building was through the back door, which was right off the parking lot, which was down a 40-foot embankment, like a right-angle embankment, that in the wintertime, when it was raining, when it was icing up, you kind of slid down that embankment with your lunch and with your coffee. And, you know, you didn't wear good shoes because you were going to be tracking in a bunch of mud. But that's how we got into the building, to open up the back door to get into the studio. And then after a while, they did give us a key to the building so that we didn't have to slide down that embankment.
We also had, we didn't have any windows to the outside when they built that building. We had interior windows, just like you do in a radio station, but we didn't have any. So I remember somebody made a painting of a window so you could see the the trees, the grass.
We would give the weather forecast literally by opening up the back door, looking to see if we had sun or clouds or snow. And there were a few times that we thought we knew what the weather was like, and then people would call in and say, no, it's not sunny. It's snowing out. You have to look out the back door.
Oh, that's great. Well, what about you, Alex? What are some of your best memories?
Well, you mentioned earlier there was a little more than meets the eye to being general manager. And one of the things that happened was we were on the very early part of NPR's switch over to satellites for distribution. We didn't have, it was phone lines before that. Mm-hmm. And we were on the campus of APU. I'm not sure if you know about this, Speedy. And NPR or CPB, whoever was running that, wanted us to install a satellite earth station. But we had a landlord. Our landlord was Alaska Pacific University. So I went to the president, whose office was just down the hall. That was Glenn Olds. And talked to him about that. And he said, I'm not so sure about this. There's this aesthetic problem. There weren't a lot of satellite dishes around in those days. So anyway, it went all the way to the board of APU, and they declined.
Oh.
So we had to install the Earth Station up at Eagle River or someplace instead of on campus.
So, BD, you mentioned looking out the window and getting the weather forecast that way.
Eyewitness weather reports, yep.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know a lot of people around the state, and especially here in this building, miss your voice. So I was wondering, for old time's sake, if I could get you to read a weather forecast for today.
Oh, sure.
And unfortunately, since we don't know what the weather will be like. This show is not live anymore. We're about 3 weeks out still. I came up with a really safe weather forecast you could read if that's...
Okay. This is cold. Usually I practice. Good day. This is BD Trantina. The time is right now. This morning in South Central Alaska, we'll have clouds ranging from none to many, with temperatures increasingly likely in the afternoon. Wind will be blowing, but may or may not be noticeable. This evening, expect temperatures to drop and skies to start to darken until the sun goes down. Daylight loss or gain will depend on the month. This is KSKA FM 91.1.
I appreciate that. I'm going to put this in the CD player, and then instead of Chuck Mangione, this is what's going to play every okay. time we're off the air. So
still going to be the bearer of bad news, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, I want to thank both my guests, founding general manager Alex Hills and longtime KSK program director BD Trantina. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we're going to continue celebrating KSKA's 45th year on the air by speaking with the one and only Shanti Elder. Over the years, she's worked as a volunteer coordinator and has hosted a music program on KSKA since 1978. She's also an accomplished musician and teacher. You can hear her show Traveling Music on KSKA Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Here's Shanti.
Well, there was a job opening that I applied for as a part-time announcer, I think, and I didn't get it, but they said that there was a volunteer show that was open. Somebody had just left, and I said, well, that sounds fun. And so they just kind of handed it to me. I had never done any radio production at all. I did have a license because I had a television degree. I have a master's in television production, so I knew about that. And I kind of was dabbling in radio. I thought, well, you know, it's not as good as TV because there's no pictures. And then I didn't know that 45 years later, I'd still be doing radio. And of course, the fun thing about radio is you can use your imagination a lot, too. And it's every bit as good as television.
Yeah. And was that original show the same format that we can hear today, essentially?
The show was called The Chords Are Stacked, which is a musical pun. In music theory, if you have chords on top of each other, that's called Chords Are Stacked. And a friend of mine gave me the title. And so I was playing acoustic music. It was reel-to-reel tape. And I am not a technological genius with things. So it took me 4 hours to do my first one-hour show. And I was just scared of everything. There were these buttons, you know, the yellow button. Could it be in? Did it have to be out? Was it going to ruin everything? And eventually I ended up being volunteer coordinator where I had to teach other people how to use this equipment. And so, you know, I did learn it pretty well.
I mean, you kind of mentioned, like, putting your show together with reel-to-reel and stuff like
yeah.
that. And, you know, since I've been a part of, you know, Alaska Public Media, KSKA, it's a lot of computers and stuff like that. So, I mean, how did it kind of compare then to now? And maybe how was that transition? You did mention you're not incredibly technologically sophisticated.
I think what happens is if you need to learn something, you will. And I've always wanted to learn just enough to do what I want to do. I don't need to know all the bells and whistles. We had an engineer that was really helpful, really nice guy. And we had this little RDAT machine, you know, that was a tiny little, looked like a cassette recorder. And that was, we were recording things on that for a while. And he was so excited about the possibilities. You could skip ahead. You could, like, make, and I just, can you just tell me on, off, record, and play? And he never understood that. Engineers are different sorts of people. Like I said, nicest guy. But all I needed for myself and for the volunteers, off, on, record, and play. The end. So, you know, I learned what I needed to learn. And people were always super helpful, super friendly. They never made me feel stupid. It was such a great, fun bunch of people. And we were all just learning as we go. That's the main thing, because none of us had a radio background. I mean, the program director, nobody. We were just like kids in a candy store. What a fun thing we can do. This is amazing.
Look at us making radio.
Yeah. And they're letting us choose the music. I mean, you know, with commercial stations, they tell you what you play, and there's a lot of rules. And here you just pick what you like.
Like, is this allowed?
Yeah, this is really fun. So that's how we were able to keep board operators, too. Like, somebody would announce between programs. Maybe at the fourth hour of their shift, they could produce a program.
Mm.
Or maybe they didn't ever want to do a program. Maybe they just wanted to talk in between the shows and learn more about it. So it kept people happy. And I was volunteer coordinator for 13 years.
Well, we saw a lot of people come and go, eh?
Yeah, and they were all good people. They were just all really fun, talented people. And so I really enjoyed working with them.
Would you say maybe like public media, public radio attracts kind of a type maybe that...
A little bit. I mean, I know when we merged with television, television kind of was calling us the T-shirts and the tie-dye, and they were the suits and the hair manicure people. And it's fun. I love to visit radio stations in other towns because people are always really open about, yeah, come on in, let's look at our studio. And it seems to be a very common theme around Alaska, just and other studios, too. It's just, I think the people that are attracted are artistic, eccentric, fun. It was a really good bunch of people. I loved working with the people.
Wow. Do you have any, maybe like a specific favorite memory that might stick out to you over the years? I know it's hard to just pick one.
Well, I was really excited. For a little while, KSKA did a bluegrass festival, and that was a huge success. We did one out at the state fairgrounds and made thousands and thousands of dollars. People had a really good time. There were some minor flaws, like the fairgrounds decided that, you know, you didn't actually sign up to have the lights in the bathroom turned on, so we're leaving them off. Stupid things like that. It's like,
okay.
What? So, yeah, there was a few bugs that needed to get worked out.
Working alongside KSKA for so long, you know, would you say that, you know, it's been impactful in any kind of positive ways in your life? Other than, you know, I mean, I think you've mentioned some stuff, but, you know.
Yeah, for me, it's always been wonderful when people will tell me, like, Vern Tejas was climbing Denali, and he heard a song, Steve Goodman's song about his father. And it really resonated with him, and it just touched him at the right moment, because I think he had difficulties with his father, and there was this song about My Old Man is the name of the song. And a number of times people have come up and told me, you know, you played this song at just the right time. And of course, I have no way of knowing what's the right song at the right time. But that always makes me feel appreciated. I used to love doing it live. I mean, I worked here on Saturdays. I worked Tuesday through Saturday. Yeah. And on Saturdays, I did the show live, and that was pretty fun. People could call up and request things. But in those days, we had to run to a back room with the vinyl albums, pull out the album, cue it up. We had two turntables and try to get that. And I remember one of my more fun shows, I decided I'm going to do the theme home. And I knew just off the top of my head, you know, this guy sings a song about home, this woman sings a song about home. But I hadn't planned it like that. So I was like, I put one on and run to the back room and pull out the next record. And, you know, there's a certain adrenaline rush of like, if this works, it's going to be awesome. And if this doesn't work, it's going to be kind of embarrassing.
But then that you get done and they just kind of that relief of success.
Yeah, I would feel really good about like I did a theme show and I felt like this is – I don't computerize my music. I mean, I have, you know, about 1,000 CDs and somebody said, have you, you know, put them on a computer? It's like, no, I'm not going to take my time to do that. But I do know in my head this artist has a song and – you know, I can't always find it, but I usually can. When I retired, after I worked at KSKA, I went back to school and became a music teacher. And then after I retired from that, after 21 years, my first project in retirement was organizing my CDs because they were just in random little plastic bags of stuff. And it took me days, like maybe 3 or 4 days. And now I have them on an earthquake-proof wall shelf with little rims around it to keep them from falling out during an earthquake. And I've got a system. It's alphabetical. And, you know, Celtic is here. Alaskan musicians are here. And I can find things.
Yeah.
But it's not computerized at all.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I mean, I feel like sometimes you've got a system that works. Why break it?
Yeah. And then when COVID happened, I got a call from the program director, Linda Way, and she said that, you know, volunteers couldn't come in. And I understood completely. But then I said, could I do it from home? Could I do the program from home? And she said, sure, that'd be great. I had no idea how to do it from home. Nothing. But I have a friend that does a radio show in Fairbanks, and I called her up, talked to her. I called up all my techie friends and said, how do I do this? And 2 weeks later, I was doing a show from home. And again, if you have to learn, and I wouldn't even want to think about how long that first show took because I was doing everything wrong. You have to import things at certain frequencies, and I didn't know Audacity. I didn't, et cetera, et cetera. There's these programs. And then eventually she said, you can come back. It's like, you know, I'm kind of fine with not driving 90 miles round trip.
Yeah.
Just staying at home. It's like,
you've got your whole CD collection.
Yeah. And somebody was asking, I mean, I personally do like doing it live better. I almost spend more time on it at home because at home, if I make a mistake, it's like, I can fix it. I should fix it.
About one and word or
some stumble. And you know, if it's live, it's like, it's over, I'm moving along.
Yeah, can't dwell on it.
Yeah, I'm not going to. When I was training volunteers, it was like, nobody's going to die. Because there'd be some really scared people. It's like, there could be some bad sound. Nobody's going to die.
It's okay.
Yeah. And people were really committed to learning how to be good announcers. And, you know, I tried to give them feedback. And again, it was fun.
Yeah. Well, I guess a final wrap-up question, you know, where would you like to see KSKA in the future?
I would like to see it even more community. I love that there are community shows. One of the things that I was disappointed at, when I went back to school, they abandoned the volunteer coordinator job. That just ended because there was automation. And so the board operators, there's no board operators. There were people that were writing the PSAs. They're gone. Little by little, the people that were producing programs here, they moved on. I'm one of the last volunteer-produced music programs. And I would like to see more community programs like that because we are an Alaskan station. And we have a lot of national talk radio, which is interesting, but it's better, in my opinion, when it's more community. I love it, like you did the arts show. I love it, the other shows like, you know, Outdoor Explorer, just that are very Alaskan, because that's something that KSKA can do, and nobody else can do it as well. So I would like to see it move even more in a community direction.
I'd love that.
You know, I would love it. Like when I was doing the show live, if somebody was coming through town, I would contact them and say, hey, you want to get interviewed on the radio? And so I got to meet some of my heroes, you know, my bluegrass heroes, my Irish heroes, acoustic heroes. First time I ever interviewed somebody, it was Rosalie Sorrells. And I thought, oh, I'm being kind of pretentious because like I'm just a little volunteer at this public radio station. And why should she say yes to me? And then I realized after I talked to her, she was so sweet and it's a symbiotic relationship. Obviously, then I can tell people about her music. I can play her music. I can talk about her concert. And so, you know, I got way braver. So I got to meet Jay Unger, who wrote Ashokan Farewell. You know, I got to meet Byron Berline, who's one of my fiddling heroes. And I couldn't have done it any other place. So affecting my life, it was like, how cool is that? I feel like if I'd been in any other state, I would have never met these people, and I would have never had access to the whole, you know, situation.
That was longtime KSKA contributor, host, and friend of the station, Shanti Elder. We've been reflecting on the past 45 years of us being on the air. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thank you to my guests, Beattie Trantina and Alex Hills. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Ammon Swenson produces the show. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.